From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Ahead of the August 26th primary election, we're exploring an issue concerning just who can vote in certain races. A voter-approved amendment to the state constitution added nearly 16 years ago is intended to keep primary elections open to all voters when only candidates of a single party have qualified to run. But according to the State Division of Elections, a last-minute write-in candidate can close such primary races. We'll explore how this loophole could impact some state house elections this year and past legislative efforts to change the policy. Plus, more than 65 million Americans serve as caregivers for a family member or loved one, and that number is expected to increase in the coming years. Learn the symptoms of caregiver stress, some coping techniques, and where to turn for help here in Southwest Florida. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. For people serving as caregivers for a loved one with dementia or some other disability, the day-to-day demands of that unpaid work can be physically, mentally, and emotionally overwhelming. Coming up later this hour, we'll explore the signs and symptoms of caregiver stress, some coping skills for dealing with that stress and fatigue, and where to turn to for help. But first, Florida voters approved an amendment to the state constitution nearly 16 years ago, intended to open up primary elections to all voters when the candidates in a given race are all from the same political party. 2 years later, in 2000, then-Secretary of State Katherine Harris wrote a Division of Elections opinion stating that if a write-in candidate qualifies for the general election, the primary must remain closed only to that party's voters. The situation almost ensures that voters of a single party will determine the outcome in the August 26th primary, as write-in candidates overwhelmingly don't win in Florida elections. This loophole in Florida's open primary rule could impact several Florida House races in the 2014 election, including the contest for Cape Coral's State House District 77 seat, currently held by Republican Representative Dane Eagle. And in another South Florida State House race, there has been a lawsuit aimed at keeping a write-in candidate off the ballot. We're taking a closer look at the impact of this open primary loophole, as well as previous legislative efforts to end the practice. Returning to the studio this morning is Florida Gulf Coast University political science professor Dr. Roger Green. Welcome back.
Hi, nice to be here, John.
We're also joined by News Press political columnist Betty Parker. You can read her coverage of state politics in her column Parker on Politics in Saturday editions of the News Press and online at news-press.com. Betty, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for the invitation, John. Glad to be here.
We're also rejoined by League of Women Voters of Florida President Deirdre McNabb. Thanks again for your time, Deirdre.
Thanks, John. Happy to be here.
And lastly, we're speaking with Dave Ehrenberg. He's state attorney for Florida's 15th Judicial Circuit in Palm Beach County, as well as a former White House fellow and former state senator who served in the legislature for almost a decade, beginning in 2002. His district included portions of Lee County. Dave Ehrenberg, welcome back. It's been a long time.
It has, John. Thanks for having me back.
And I invite our listeners to join the conversation as well. Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Roger and Betty, let's start with you. Since then, Secretary of State Katherine Harris wrote that opinion that allowed for this write-in candidate loophole in the state's open primary policy in 2000. Is this something that happens frequently in Florida elections, or does it seem to be particularly prevalent this year? And Roger, I'll start with you.
Well, it's not an enormously frequent event, but it's happened enough so that it does, create some unease among observers. This year, I think it has some heightened interest because of the District 77 race and just sort of some of the extreme aspects of this in terms of the obvious contrivance involved on the part of the write-in candidate.
And Betty, what about you? Have you seen anything quite like this in recent years?
Oh, well, as you said, it seems to happen once or twice every election. I think the first one I encountered was in the year 2000. I was talking to a candidate this morning who reminded me of that when a write-in closed the primary. And as you said, this year it was a higher profile race with this District 77 race. And it was sort of a last-minute entry, literally within the last 10 minutes of qualifying. The right end was in, then he was out, then he was in again. So it created a little drama there.
And Roger, we've opened the door for the District 77 race here. We have four Republicans running in that race, incumbent Dane Eagle, of course, challengers Terry Kramer, Brandon Ivey, and Jim Roach, and now write-in candidate Democrat Jeremy Wood. And Betty, you've written about this a bit, so I'll start with you. What do we know about Jeremy Wood's candidacy?
Jeremy Wood he's 22 or 24 years old. He lives with his parents in Cape Coral. He's never had any political profile before. He told me, or he sent me an email that said he's always been interested in politics, but he also believes that it should be up to the voters in the party to choose their party nominee. He indicated he did this with the definite idea of closing the primary, and he certainly has not been present at numerous forums. He's had opportunity to campaign at events that don't cost anything. All it takes is time, and he's had no presence, no profile at all.
I haven't been able to find exactly, as you said, any information about his platform or candidacy. There's no website. I don't think there's even a Facebook page related to his candidacy.
Correct.
He's asked for the media to respect his privacy. Fox 4 reporter Warren Wright went to his house and reported that Wood's parents said he wouldn't come out of his bedroom. Is this unusual behavior for someone running a legitimate race for a state House seat?
Well, yes. Normally, candidates do want all the exposure they can get. It's not unusual for a write-in candidate closing the primary. Many of them have said, they do say outright, some of them in the past, that they did it solely for the reason of closing the primary. But I've never... I can think of maybe one write-in who showed his face at events, but you know, the vast majority of them never campaign. They never put out a press release. They don't have a Facebook. They do nothing.
Roger, do you find this suspicious?
Well, yes, clearly. I mean, in response, I guess I just want to follow up on one of the arguments that the young man made about, you know, he believes strongly in closed primaries and that is somehow more appropriate for our system of representative democracy. But I think what you have to bear in mind is that the 1998 constitutional amendment that opened up the primaries when the winner of a primary would have been running unopposed in the general election, there was a clear intent behind that. And I think that clear intent is being subverted when write-in candidates use this kind of contrivance to close the primary. So I'm not sure that's a particularly credible argument he's making about, you know, it being more appropriate to close the primaries that way.
And just can I get your response to I guess some of the negative publicity that he has gotten from the media and people questioning whether or not he is a serious candidate?
Well, I think that in itself undermines the credibility of his claims that he's a sincere candidate, write-in candidate operating in good faith, if he's refusing in a steadfast way to actually campaign or run in any fashion or to respond to media requests for interviews, then how can he possibly claim that he's operating in good faith as a write-in candidate? He would welcome, if he were a credible candidate, he would welcome that kind of media attention. It's free publicity that he could take advantage of.
And Deirdre McNaugh, you know, president of the League of Women Voters of Florida, I wanted to bring you into the conversation now. Does the League take a position on this particular issue and on this loophole in Florida's open primary policy?
Yeah, I'm going to use pretty strong language and echo an article in the Miami Herald, which called this really a sham and a very anti-democratic situation that we're seeing in this state. Clearly, voters approved the amendment by 64% to open the primaries when there were only one party running. So this is all a result of a decision and rules that were written by Catherine Harris back in 2000 when she was Secretary of State. And it's really undermined precisely what the voters had wanted to happen, which was to allow all voters to vote. So we are opposed to this. I think it's very instructive to know, according to research we've done, that no write-in candidate has ever won. I think the Miami Herald said it very eloquently when they said, when these write-in candidates run, voters lose. Large groups of voters are barred and kept out of the election. These candidates pay no fee. They collect no signatures. They knock on no doors. They go to no candidate forums. And as I've been listening to the description earlier about this one young man, they're hiding in their bedrooms. Clearly, this is not something that is in the best interest of the voters or in the state of Florida. And it would, I know Senator Arenberg had tried to get some legislation through several years ago, and it's really quite intolerable for our state, and hopefully we'll see some movement on it going forward.
And State Attorney Dave Arenberg, let's bring you into the conversation. When you were a state senator, you know, as Deirdre McNabb just mentioned, this was something that was an issue for you. You wanted to close this loophole. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and it's hard to get politicians who benefit from the system to change the system. And so it was an uphill battle. I was able to get an amendment through, though, that requires write-in candidates to live in their districts at the time of qualifying. And for the first time since we were able to pass that amendment, that provision has been invoked. And there was a successful use of it in Broward County that reopened the primary because the sham write-in candidate, and Deidre's right, it's a sham in almost every case, the sham write-in candidate didn't live in the district. What happens is usually one of the politicians in the race, one of the candidates, usually the most conservative one on the Republican side, or when the Democrats do it, the most liberal candidate on the Democratic side, will put up a sham candidate, someone they know, and oftentimes it's a young person, like a 22-year-old who lives at home with his mother, who is easily manipulated into doing something that really disenfranchises voters and harms democracy. And it got so bad in Palm Beach County on the Democratic side that a candidate for a port commission here was running in a Democratic primary, well, it was an open primary, and then was able to close it by putting a write-in candidate in the race. And how do I know that the candidate knew the write-in candidate? It's because the write-in candidate was her own mother. She got her own mother to
really?
Write her as a write-in candidate. And, you know, I've been critical of a lot of things Catherine Harris has done, but that opinion, which subverts the intent of the voters in 1998, was one of the worst. And then the write-in loophole has now disenfranchised more voters than any other election scam in modern history. And I've not only filed bills against it, I've not only tried to close it legislatively, but I've raised money to file a lawsuit against it, and that has also been unsuccessful. But I do believe that the loophole is unconstitutional, and hopefully a court will see it our way.
Well, now over in your neck of the woods, Dave Arenberg, there's currently litigation regarding the State House District 96 race, where we have Broward County Commissioner Kristen Jacobs facing write-in candidate Ronald Bray, who was actually a former campaign aide of Jacobs. Now, an independent voter in that district has sued to keep Bray off the ballot on the grounds that he doesn't live in the district. Is that a case that you're following, Dave Arenberg?
Yes, I've spoken to the lawyer involved in that case. And they are trying to get that write-in off the ballot because that write-in does not live in the district. And so it would be a successful use of the amendment that I was able to pass a few years ago. Now, there was another use of it where the write-in didn't live in the district. And another race in Broward County that I recently read was reopened. And so I think that provision should stand the test of constitutionality, that a write-in candidate must at least live in his or her district at the time of qualifying. That is an extra requirement that is not required of legitimate candidates, of anyone else, only write-in candidates, because write-in candidates, really, in almost every case, are sham candidates. Not only have they not won a race, apparently they've not received more than like a 0.5% combined in any race combined. I mean, the only reason why they exist is to, for the most part, is to disenfranchise voters, not to create more choices for voters. And shame on them who participate in this scam. And that's why it's great that you have programs like this and news reports that show the absurdity of this, that so-called candidate who lives with his mother and is afraid to come out to talk to the cameras, he should be shamed for what he's doing to democracy.
And Roger Green, is there any kind of legal recourse? I mean, as we were just hearing from Dave Arenberg in that case over on the Florida's East Coast, they're claiming the write-in candidate isn't living in the district he's running in. That's not the case here with the District 77 race, but is there any kind of legal precedence for or anything that a candidate has to do besides qualify to demonstrate that they're actually campaigning and want the seat?
Well, no. I think one of the things that I know Dave has tried to seek in the past is to simply institute some kind of legislative change that would set a threshold, a kind of minimum threshold for actually running or campaigning. And otherwise, it would kind of nullify this as a way of gaming the system. But, you know, maybe if there's enough publicity, you know, about the problem, this could change the deliberations in the legislature and bring about some action in the near future.
And setting some sort of minimum qualifications in and of itself could be problematic.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the issues there, I mean, it's one of those cases where the devil would be in the details, because if you institute a requirement that somebody has to actually run or campaign, then you could run into some, you know, details as to what constitutes the minimum threshold for running or campaigning. Does that mean that if I go to, you know, signs in a day and get one sign and plop it down in a friend's yard that I'm running or campaigning? But I think that at least on general principle, something that would at least clarify or institute the requirement that somebody actually run or campaign would be a good start. And then the details can follow from that.
We're exploring a loophole in Florida elections to a constitutional amendment intended to keep some primary races open to all voters. We're speaking with FGCU political science professor Dr. Roger Green, News Press political columnist Betty Parker, state attorney and former state senator Dave Ehrenberg, and League of Women Voters of Florida President Deirdre McNabb. Connect with our guests with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And again, looking just at this District 77 race, I'm going to focus in on you, Roger, and Betty here. But in regards to the candidates in this race, who do you think stands to gain most from this primary being closed, and who's going to be hurt the worst?
Well, I would say, I mean, I'll be curious to hear Betty's take, but I would say that the incumbent, Dane Eagle, would benefit the most from it, and probably Democrat-turned-Republican Jim Roach would be the one who would suffer the most. I mean, it's still, you know, not clear based on what's happened in the past whether what could be a hypothetical difference in the outcome would actually materialize. But clearly, just in general terms, that's how I would read it.
Mm. Yeah, it is interesting, though, because we've had a couple of open primaries here in the past. I think the last couple of years we've had at least one or two. And I thought there would be a much higher turnout of voters, you know, Democrats and nonpartisan voters in those open primaries, and there was not.
Yeah.
There was virtually no significant difference at all. And there was maybe an uptick of a couple hundred, but you can't say that's significant or it didn't really, there was no notable difference whatsoever. Yeah, a lot of people have thought Jim Roach would have benefited the most from an open primary, and I'm not so sure. You know, he is a former Democrat. A lot of Democrats are not happy with him because he switched parties. Dane Eagle probably is the best known and has the highest profile among, you know, Republican primary voters, so having it closed probably helps him to some degree, but I'm not sure. You know, I could argue it either way on help or hurt, and I'm not sure it makes a huge difference in either direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, in fact, even one of the things I'd say is that what could easily get lost as an important issue here isn't even just whether it could truly affect the outcome of the election. It's more that in combination with a lot of other things we see that essentially represent gaming the system to defy the public's will or distort electoral outcomes, this is one of many things that in combination, I think, undermine the public's confidence in elections. I mean, whether it's gerrymandered districts or unusually restrictive voter registration or voting procedures or campaign finance improprieties, all of these things in combination, I think they have a kind of cumulative effect that erodes the public's confidence in our system of democracy. So I think if you look at it in that light, the fact that it might not truly affect the outcome of any individual race maybe isn't the important issue. It's that it's a distortion of our system of representative democracy.
Right. I would tend to agree with that. And I have to jump in because I couldn't help but notice in the few hours after qualifying ended, I was watching some of the social media and the Twitter chats between a lot of Republican operatives, maybe one or two Democrats, but there was a lot of joking and carrying on about how successful they were in getting candidates right in to close the primaries. It was all part of a big game to them. Hey, so-and-so got a write-in. Why didn't so-and-so get a write-in? What a loser. You know, it's a big game.
Well, you know, Roger, you had just mentioned gerrymandered districts, so I did wanted to get into that issue just a little bit here. We did have the recent decision from Judge Terry Lewis ruling in that lawsuit against how Florida's congressional district boundaries were drawn 2 years ago. And Judge Lewis found that lawmakers did violate the constitutional amendments approved by voters. And the Florida legislature just announced this week that it will not be appealing that ruling. Deirdre McNabb, as the League of Women Voters, was part of the coalition that filed that lawsuit. What's your reaction to the judge's decision?
Well, we are the lead plaintiff in that lawsuit, and we are thrilled with the judge's ruling. And it is really a major milestone for Florida voters. We just heard some earlier discussion about how frustrated voters should be. Well, the fact that we got these fair districts amendments in the Constitution, which basically are designed to prevent politicians from drawing districts that they are guaranteed to win over and over again, is really a huge win for the voters. And the judge's decision just this week really puts teeth into these amendments. So this is a big win for Florida voters. And I want to really encourage all the people listening today to make sure their registration is up to date. We're in a very important election year for the state with many, many critical issues. These in-between presidential election years are very important and often determined by a small number of votes. So I hope everybody is making sure they are A, registered, and B, fully up to date. This is a big win. We have a very important meeting with the judge tomorrow to see exactly what will happen with regard to next steps and whether the congressional districts will be redrawn before the election this year. So we don't have anything to report yet. That meeting will occur tomorrow. But voters should know that really some very major things have happened in Florida that make politicians more accountable. And the other question I've gotten a lot is, what about the long lines? Are we going to see long lines this year? Yeah. I think because of the legislation that we really pushed hard for in 2013, the legislature was embarrassed by the law they passed, which cut early voting days in half. We will, and they've reinstituted those early voting days. I don't think we'll see the long lines we saw before because of some of the improvements that have been made. But the most important thing is, listeners, please make sure your registration's up to date and get out there and vote some really important races and amendments on the ballot this year.
Well, and Deirdre, as you mentioned, how the judge's decision might affect this year's election is still yet to be determined. But logistically, is it simply too late in the election season to see any changes this year? I mean, I understand in some counties, absentee ballots have already been mailed out.
Some absentee ballots have been mailed out to our working service people overseas. I think the answer is it will be close, but I think it is still doable. And we really have to wait and see what the judge decides and directs tomorrow.
And when lawmakers do revise congressional district boundaries, regardless of whether that happens, you know, before or after November, how do you think the judge's ruling on the state constitution being violated during the process last time will impact how lawmakers go forward this time?
Well, you know, the judge's writing and words were very, very strong. He used some very strong language, including conspire, and he said that the legislature's assertion that this was going to be the most open and transparent process ever, that the process, in fact, made a mockery out of that statement, and, in fact, there was a shadow process that went on as citizens turned out across the state for these fair districting hearings. There were consultants and stand-ins submitting maps. So I think the teeth that the judge provided in his ruling is going to be very important. And at the end of the day, we have our legislators who will be drawing the maps. It is my belief that going forward, we will hopefully see some much greater integrity from our legislature in terms of following the specific language that voters so overwhelmingly approved. And they know now that the court is prepared to really enforce that. So that is big news for Florida. And there are so many other states in this country that are wrestling with gerrymandering, which basically is like, as Mayor Bloomberg said, it's like a predetermined worldwide wrestling match. The parties have already decided who's going to win. So people are watching Florida from other states to see how this works. And these are some very important steps, and that court decision was really a very exciting triumph for all of us in the state of Florida.
And Betty, I'm going to ask you a question I asked Deirdre before. You know, of course, the language in the judge's ruling was strong there, but just, you know, logistically, do you think it's too late for us to reasonably expect to see any kind of changes in congressional district boundaries before the election?
I can't. You know, everybody says you never predict what a judge will do, but
sure.
It's really, really hard to think this could happen before this next election. I would bet a substantial sum that it'll be next year's election, but I'm certainly been wrong before. But here in Southwest Florida, I don't think we will see a tremendous change simply because, I mean, this whole area is Republican. It's really hard. I can't see how they could draw a district that would be any different than significantly in terms of party registration than it is now.
Sure. And it just in regards to, you know, going back to the district, State House District 77 race we've been discussing earlier, whether or not this was an open or closed primary, we know that Democrats don't tend to turn out in the same numbers in non-presidential years that they do during presidential election years. Do you think that whether it's open or closed would really have impacted the outcome anyhow?
Of the upcoming House race?
Yes, of the District 77.
No, I don't think so. I don't. Democrats in off-year primaries, Democrats and NPAs don't turn out much at all because they're not in the habit. There's very little for them. The big challenge is to help people realize that, yes, you do have races you can vote in this election. And that's just a major hump. You got to get people over on that one.
And a final question for you, Betty. I know State Representative Heather Fitzenhagen has picked up a write-in challenger in her re-election bid for the District 78 seat here in Fort Myers. But before Bates McCold Haney had qualified as a write-in candidate, Fitzenhagen was running unopposed. Now she will have to campaign, but is that necessarily a bad thing for her?
No, it's not. And that's a really different situation because there was no other candidate in the race. There was no primary anyway. She was the only candidate on the ballot, and still is, other than the write-in. This has actually beneficial to her in a lot of ways because it allows her to spend money and act like she's in a campaign mode and raise her profile for future political races.
By the way, this is Dave Ehrenberg. That
yes.
That write-in appears to be a sham as well, as with most write-ins. Now, it's not as malicious as the write-in that closes a primary because that disenfranchises voters. This write-in will not disenfranchise voters. It won't close the primary. It just enables a candidate who otherwise would not be on the ballot to spend money, campaign, get name ID, and win with 100% of the vote. It's still a sham, but it's much more benign than the traditional write-in loophole.
Correct. Yes, I agree with that.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the program, but thank you so much to everybody for joining us.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. Thank you.
Dr. Roger Green is a political science professor here at Florida Gulf Coast University. Betty Parker's column, Parker on Politics, can be found in each Saturday edition of the News Press and at news-press.com. Deirdre McNabb is president of the League of Women Voters of Florida, and Dave Ehrenberg is the state attorney for Florida's 15th Judicial Circuit in Palm Beach County and a former state senator whose district at the time included portions of Lee County. We're taking a short break, but when we return, a closer look at the signs and symptoms of caregiver stress, some tips on coping, and where to turn for help here in Southwest Florida. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.